Welcome to the Top M&A Entrepreneurs. Today, my guest is Duke Henninger, who was working as a CFO, bought a company, and basically said, I hate it. Kind of like Ron Burgundy jumping into the bear pit, saying, I immediately regret this decision. So, Duke, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So, what were you doing before you jumped into acquisition entrepreneur?
Well, going back a little bit, I was a salesperson in 2008 or whatever. I was right in school. I didn't really care much about school. I thought I just want to get something done. I'm going to go into sales. I'm going to end up learning the key sales skills. And then I'm going to go into, I'm going to start building my empire.
Yeah.
And I really thought I'm just going to buy and sell businesses. So fast forward, it was 2008. Everything crashed. I decided, I better choose a more, a route that's more technical. I need a job. Chose accounting, went into public accounting. After 3 years of public accounting, went into industry, was a controller, kind of did some FP&A work. We were both targets of acquisition during that time, as well as we were acquiring a couple of other companies. And so I thought, hey, I could totally do this. I could replicate this.
You could do it. No problem.
And the interesting thing was, as we're talking with all these business owners and we're chasing after their businesses, I thought, man, I'm so much smarter than them. Like, I can totally do this all day long, and I can do a much better job than they can. So after a few years of that, I left. I went and jumped into fractional CFO work, and I really thought, okay, this is going to be a means to an end. I'm a consultant now, so I can charge consultant rates. I don't have to work full-time, and with my available time, I'm going to focus on, my next step, what's it going to be? And I thought, well, I could start something, but that's really risky. And, I don't have a ton of capital. I was still in my 20s. And so I got introduced to a business broker and started looking through the options. And I didn't even know that was a thing, this like small business broker. And I kind of told him my predicament of like, look, I don't have a ton of capital, but I have, man, I'm so smart and I'll be able to do really
I know the language of business, which is accounting. I know it.
Oh yeah, because as we all know, accountants make great, great CEOs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had this little restoration company that was presented to me. It was more of a turnaround, and the deal with it though was, look, it had some really good years in the past, and I could see I'm doing all the spreadsheeting, mapping everything out, all the numbers seem to be doing really well. And then this,
let me ask you, you did some great projections too, right?
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. It was going from this and it's instantly going to go like this, right? And, so I started talking to
that's what they all do. I don't care. Like nobody projects like, it's probably going to go down for a couple years and it's going to go up. It's always
no,
goes up.
No, man. I'm talking to this owner and I, the story was he stepped away and he took a job and he thought this thing was, he kind of reached he put all the capital into it and he put hundreds of thousands of dollars into this thing. And it was a franchise. And so, and turns out, well, he was more of a technical guy and I could see that, look, it's not a great fit. I've got way more personality than him. I'll do a much better job of this, right? And so I bought it. And I could do, because it wasn't doing super well at the time, it was all owner financed. I only had to put a little bit into it, basically paid just asset value for what was there. And we got started.
Yeah.
And that was in 2019. And, I had a couple of kids at that point, one more, on the way. And this was going to be the thing that was really going to start it off.
And you told your wife, this is going to be it, honey.
Yeah. And she was super supportive. Super supportive, but yeah, it was a little bit more of a ride than I expected.
Wait, so when did this, how long before I jumped in the bear pit? Like I immediately regret this decision. How long was that?
It actually took a while and I went into it. I went to it with this idea of I gotta project positivity into this. I'm going to be super optimistic.
It's kind of Tony Robbins. I can turn around with my will.
I can totally do this. And we got into it, started talking to all the people in the industry. You know, you want to meet everybody and know who's who. It's a very relationship-based business. And real quick, I learned that, man, this industry is super tight. Especially in our area in like Salt Lake City, Utah, everybody knows each other. You know, you have like 2 million people along this Wasatch Front from, you know, in the Salt Lake Valley and other valleys, you know, nearby. Everybody knows each other. Everybody's been doing it for 50 years and the relationships are just there. And guess what? I'm a new guy and no one really trusts. And they said, yeah, but the other guy also wasn't doing a great job at this. So, you know, we don't really think you guys are going to do a good job. I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm already seeing right out of the gate that I'm up against a lot of problems. And what I thought were the problems, you know, I'm looking like through my financial lens, you know, it wasn't really
it's
there.
It's just getting jobs with the right margins. If I just quote it right, I'm going to get it. Yeah.
Well, you know, looking at historically, you could see the numbers were there. You could see there was consistency with these particular customers. You could see it seemed on paper, it looked really good. But in reality, there was a lot more problems. But I don't know, in the due diligence period of like 30, 60, even 90 days, it's kind of hard to uncover some of those issues.
Yeah. So what did you miss? I mean, how did those, you know, evolve? Like, what could you have asked anything during that period that it would have mitigated the risk or just allowed you to understand it?
Well, I wish that I could have talked to the customers, but I was stonewalled at that request.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to see that we're shutting down. We don't want that getting out there. You know,
yeah.
And because if this all falls apart and people are thinking I'm selling my business, then I'm basically going to have to shut my doors, you know? So I didn't talk to the customers. I didn't talk to anybody in the industry. I wish I would have known that. And I don't know anything about the restoration industry. You know, this was just like, hey, this checks these boxes. This is going to be great. Recession proof, you know, business to business, you know, my customers are insurance companies. They want it and helps them save money, yada, yada, yada. And you get in real quick and it's a problem.
Yeah.
But I got in and we powered forward. And what was amazing is the day that I signed, I went to the attorney's office. I signed and I left the attorney's office. And here's the seller right with me. He gets in his car. I get in mine. I drive for 5 minutes. He calls me and says, hey, I just got a big job. So it's all yours. Here's how to do it. You got to go drive 100 miles away. It's this grocery store. You got to go in. They had a fire. I have all this equipment that needs to be cleaned up and everything. And I was like, oh, fantastic. You know, baptism by fire. I can totally do this. I got it. We did a great job. But guess what? In the restoration industry, people don't pay their bills until 6 months or more later. They want to see, is everything done? And the fire just happened. I'm at the very beginning. So now we got to wait for the whole place to get cleaned up, put back together. Then the insurance adjuster looks at it and then they pay their bills. So we have this, you know, sizable job that was sitting there and I didn't buy the AR. So all the receivables were going to this owner.
Was that on the AR? Was it big, little, red flags or anything? Or was just like... Or was it, what was the aging on it? You just go, I always tell my students, like, hey, there's a big AR. You need to check the, you know, aging report on it because this past 90 days, there's a really good chance that's never going to be collected.
Yeah, John, I'm a really good accountant. So I definitely look at the aging report.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I found out from it, it was a lot of red flags. And there were things back there. It was like, well, there's this really big AR sitting there, but you know, we're in litigation now, so there's a chance we'll get it. And we never did, you know.
Oh,
and there was a bunch of other jobs that were like that. And I said, look, these are all yours. You go get this. I'm gonna, you know, and I set up a line of credit. I figured, okay, I didn't have money. I didn't have a lot of money myself to put into this. So my own personal money was like locked up. I had the seller note. I had a line of credit. I had, you know, and with that, basically, there's my capitalization. And I was really banking on the fact that we were going to be getting consistent jobs. We would turn some of the smaller ones around sufficiently. It would be able to cover those operating expenditures throughout that first period of time. And man, things got tight.
Ooh.
You know, so fast forward, I bought it in April of 2019. And in August 2019, I'm looking at the cash forecast. By the way, I know how to do a cash forecast. That's super helpful.
Yeah. What's your runway? Like, you got a runway of what, 3 months, six months?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. And I'm looking, I see, you know, we did get jobs and they were paying periodically and it was good. The deal was I get to keep anything that you didn't invoice. So there were some jobs that I got and was able to invoice very quick, get paid on those in, you know, a few weeks to a month or two. And it was, That's what really what funded operations.
Well, let me recap, like, how big was this business? Is like, it was a $100,000 business or was it $500,000?
It was a $500,000 business that had been there for a couple of years. And then it went right down to 200. And that's, he put it on the market when it was 500. By the time it sold, he figured, oh, I'll sell this thing in a couple of months, right?
Yeah.
And it takes like a year or more to sell some of these small companies. So I bought it and he had already stepped away, took another job and was just letting his technicians run it. You know, they're not salespeople. Didn't have any salesperson there at the time.
And how many people, how many technicians were on staff?
There were three technicians. And that was it. So I stepped in this company. It was a $200,000 top line company, break even at the time, you know, and that's where I thought, okay, I'm going to be okay. This is break even right now. I think I'm going to get in and I'm going to turn that top line upward and we're going to have profitability and we'll be able to go from there.
Easy lad. We're going to start taking vacations with the wife.
Totally
you know,
but... fine. No, and I figured it would be a while before we really got there, right?
Yeah.
But my 5-year projections were nice and linear growth, you know, fake stuff. And so I got to this point in August, cash got super tight. And it was, and all I had was that. It was a $30,000 job. You know, average job size in this industry for my business was like $2,500, maybe $5,000 for like a good one. And so a $30,000 job was going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And
you, let me ask you about that. Did you do anything? How do I collect faster? Or were there constraints where you had to wait for insurance companies to pay them so they could pay you?
Oh, I did everything. Talking with the insurance adjuster, can I invoice you? We're finished right now. Can I invoice
you? I'll give you a 5%
right
discount.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I'll give you 10%. Really? I'll give you 10%, 15%. What do you need? And the reality is in that industry, you have people that are sitting at a desk behind the computer and they're like, yeah, I don't really care. Like,
I don't care. I don't care about Duke.
I just want to touch this file one time. That's all. And it's going to be right at the end when everything's complete. I can look it over, check a box, and then send the check. So I finally got that paid and it was like, oh, heaven sent. This is amazing. And that bought me two more months of runway. But
that's
by
it.
That point, the sales had been slowing. You know, I thought the sales are going to be going up, but here I am, new guy. So the new sales had started to drop off. And,
what was happening with that? I mean, like, what were you doing to say, hey, I'm a pleasant guy. They like me better. And what were you doing different from what he was doing in marketing and sales to bring business in?
Well, you know, it's like how the new president always blames the last president.
Yes.
Well, I stepped into a company that he stepped away from. And when he stepped away from it, people noticed that and started using our competitors. And so that's what I didn't know. That was that black swan, right? That I didn't really understand was like crux to all of this. So I got in and I had to win relationships, get people to know me. And then I had to start pulling jobs over this way. And that took time.
Yeah.
And this whole time I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I got to do? Like I got to reduce OPEX. We're in this 10,000-12,000 square foot facility where the office space was like 3,000 square feet of that. And I was the only person in the office, you know? And I hired a salesperson. I'm like, okay, let's get this structure set up right. I'm going to hire a salesperson. I've got technicians. I'm going to kind of like manage it all, but I need people like checking these boxes all the time, making sure it's all working. And so I, well, we had, so I had people and I had this large building. I'm like, well, let's do what I can control. What can I control right now?
Well, expenses.
Revenue yeah. I can't control immediately.
Yeah.
And I have a 2-month runway of cash and the sales aren't there. So I know that it's going to end. Like, and I know like the collection period, like unless there's some miracle that happens, this is all going to end. And so I had, I moved buildings. I went from, you know, geez, what was it, like $8,000 a month down to $4,000 a month.
Yeah. Let me ask you, about that expenses yeah. and that rent. Did, was there a, imperative on their side to try to get you to sign the lease or something real fast? And you're locked in for another 6-12 months or what?
Well, luckily it was, the landlord was really just a couple and it was their retirement, you know, thing. So they, yeah. they were pretty amenable and the previous owner was still on the lease and I was just kind of subletting from him okay. technically. Yeah. And so I went, I got a broker. He was able to find someone to take the space. The space that I was in was like actually 30 minutes away from me, but it was like a pretty desirable area. So he was able to find someone to fill that space really quick. And then he went and found a, you know, another space for me to go. And we moved and I got, you know, I just negotiated as much as I could of deferred rent. Just give me as yeah. much deferred. I can only get 3 months out of it. Well, I came over and I'm like, okay, perfect. That was my number one biggest hard cost.
Which it, hard it was $8,000 a month or something to yeah. down to, yeah, down to.
Down to $4,000. And like my insurance was paid for, like it, it got paid for. Like insurance, rent, and labor. Those are like the main costs. Everything else is a small variable cost. There really isn't a lot of cost.
Couldn't, you know, deduct 10%. It was those three things you got to focus
yeah.
on.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, great. Well, I just bought myself more time because I just deferred rent, found this other person. They just paid me my deposit back. Woohoo. I've got like 10 grand, you know, stuff that I can do with. And still I had this glaring like point in the future where my cash here's zero and it was going to come in and just have a hard landing. So I had, I started setting some, you know, stop loss kind of points. All right. If we, once we hit this point, if sales don't happen, then I have to get rid of that person. And really everybody was on the table. Like, what do? I have to have that technician and that technician. Okay.
Oh shoot. But have you ever done that before? Like I you have to pinpoint somebody that stop loss and say, I got to fire this person.
Well, yes, we had like, you know, I've been in turnarounds before and we had to put, you know, like we were like a 300 person company where I was at. And we had to, you know, we were coming up against like those, what do they call that act that prevents you from hiring or firing more than a third of people at a time. Anyway, but you know, we had to plan for like, how do we reduce this overall cost like significantly? And it would hurt like the first time doing it, it's painful. And then you start realizing, you know what? Those people are actually happy. They found other jobs. They're actually happy. And that's something that helped me in this process to go, okay, whatever happens, I know I'm going to help them. I'm going to do whatever I can to help them find their next yeah. place. But I can only go so far. So we're heading toward that. And the day came and it was like, I was 3 days away from it. Okay. This was a Friday, there was a Thursday evening. I got a call. Monday was my stop loss date. It was in November of 2019. And I got a call saying, hey, can you guys, we did electronics cleaning. So, you know, we like clean soot. Super. I didn't even know this stuff existed before I got into it. We cleaned soot off of electronics and it's a lot cheaper than the insurance company having to replace everything. Soot gets on something. It's going to mess it up. Like, hey, there's a fire to school. Can you clean like 45 computers this weekend? It's like, oh man, that would be amazing. Like 45 computers, man, that's, you know, we usually charge like $200 per computer to go clean the stuff. Oh, this is going to be great. Yeah, totally. I can totally do this. call the technicians, let them know, hey guys, I think we're going to be working the weekend. And the next morning, I got an email from my sales rep that I had hired saying, like, look, I'm out. You know, I don't think you're a very good manager. You kind of suck at this, and I'm out.
Oh my God. They like the rats are jumping the ship.
Yeah. And what was funny to me is I thought, oh, this is perfect. Well, he just left. I don't have to pay severance. Woohoo. You know? And, so there was my person that needed to go. And I went in that day to go and like scope this job. I went to this big school, had fire everywhere, and it was classrooms everywhere. And I said, hey guys, you have a bigger issue here. What this turned out to be for the next month, I had to hire 25 people working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. It was the largest job ever received in this particular franchise history.
Wow. And it started from just 45 computers, $200.
Oh, yeah. And basically, like, you know, the revenue from that job just solved all my problems.
Yeah.
And luckily they were able to get, because I saw that coming on, I went to a bank and said, hey, here's a contract. See the signed contract right here. This isn't going to pay for a while.
Yeah. When did they say they were going to pay? It's a school. It's a public, a local government. When were they going to pay?
Well, they don't pay. It's their insurance company.
Their insurance company, yeah.
Yeah, so the insurance company, usually on these jobs, so larger jobs, as I've come to learn, they're okay paying a little bit more, you know. But I had reach. That stop loss was there. I had hard costs. I needed to make payroll. And now I have to hire 25 people. And so I have like tens of thousands of dollars in labor costs that I'm going to have to pay out. I ended up paying $100,000 of labor costs on this job. And that was my real, you know, all the other, you know, consumables were fairly minimal. So I had this, it was almost a $400,000 job.
Wow.
And I had about 150 of cost in it. And so with that profits, you know, I paid off the previous note, paid off these debts. Oh, but I didn't finish. I had to go to a bank and say, okay, I need money. And I've got a truck, a van, you know, I had these assets that were free and clear. And so I was basically able, they allowed me to kind of refinance some of these things that they don't love refinancing. And I pulled, I just pulled like 30 grand out of that. I pulled 30 grand.
So you had to do an asset loan. Did they loan on your contract there?
They used that to say as the kind of the collateral, you know, they have to tell a story. And when your story is this all the time, they don't really want to give you anything.
How many people did you have to knock on the doors? Like say, I need money. Yeah.
Well, I had, you know, the company I was at previously, I was managing a portfolio of, you know, $25 million
gotcha.
in debts. So I was able to, you know, I had a network of people to go to. So it was actually fairly simple. But what's funny though, is all the network of people, they were in like the middle market space. And I'm coming to them with like, hey, I need $30,000. They just said, dude, talk to this person. It was basically like a receptionist, you know? But actually it was like our super, super great personal, it was a business banker, but a small business banker. And I was able to get her across the table fairly quick. She even came to the school we were cleaning to go sign the docs, and I had money in the account. And it was like, it was perfect timing. I can't tell you, like, you know, people say faith or religion or whatever, man, there's something to the universe, whatever you want to call it. Right. That, like, I saw something happen that wasn't supposed to happen. It was pretty amazing. And I'll give credit where credit's due on that one. And, but it was really, really cool. So like now we have money and everything's good. But the sales actually were still fairly slow. Like we had another job. We had like another $100,000 job a year later. And then, you know, and those type of jobs seemed to be the ones that would be coming across. And outside of those jobs, we were like below break even. If we were to take all those out, we weren't really getting
just
enough.
Just ugly sales.
Yeah, like yeah. It wasn't great. Like, how could you build a business plan off of spikes like this all the time, right?
What they used to do in software in trade shows.
That's yeah, it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I can't do this. And I was just stressed all the time. And oh man, 2020 didn't help.
Let me ask you about that, because the relationship I have with my wife, like something goes on in business, and it's almost like she's my board advisor. So I have to practice what I'm going to tell her to give her a good picture and the bad picture. I'm the CEO giving a presentation to my board of advisors, right?
Oh yeah.
And whether they're going to fire me.
Well, she knows that I use this like salesy voice, and the moment she hears it, like it's instant. She's like, I'm turned off. Like this, you're trying to sell me on something.
The salesy voice. Yeah.
I don't want it, you know? And so I had to have a conversation with her to explain what a bankruptcy looked like.
Oh shoot. Yeah. And you were contemplating a bankruptcy on this.
Yeah. And for us with like no assets, like we don't really have a lot. We have a home. We have these young kids. Even though like the total debts on the place was like, you know, it was like $100,000 or whatever. It was not like that was going to tank me, you know,
yeah.
And that was something that gave me a lot of stress. And so, but then, you know, going throughout, yeah, this up and down all the time, I'm like, what do I do? So I started thinking of other ways. All right, you know what we're going to do? We're going to add on extra services. We're going to solve this problem by adding crap. And you know what that crap takes is capital.
Yeah.
And so I would take, here's this like bank account with hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm like, okay, well, let's take this. Let's buy this machine. We added textile restoration. We added like we're doing art restoration, and we were adding people, processes, complexity. And every new thing, like it takes a lot of your focus.
It's a hypothesis that you still have to test. Hoping. Like, what was your results on that hypothesis? Well, it doesn't make a lot of revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's like everyone else's results, you know, where they say, here's my graph. Day one, it's going to start like this and grow. And it's never that case, right? And so, you know, it would be a while out before we started seeing something. But I'm like, I put $150K into like building out this process more. And it wasn't turning around like I really wanted it to. So I'm like, well, how do I fix the problem?
And you were going to other, I don't know what the franchise is, but you were listening to these other successful franchises going, what are you doing that I can model? And it's still not working.
You know, one of the interesting things about the franchise model is that, you know, they figure out formula, and as long as you follow that formula, then everything's going to be right. Well, the particular formula in my case, was you get an area with 3 million people and you're good. Well, the franchise started on like the Midwest and the East, where like population density was so close that 3 million people is like, you drive 15 minutes that way and 15 minutes that way, and there's your area.
That's your domain and range.
I'm in Utah, where we didn't even have 3 million people in the state. So my franchise area had to be all of Utah and half of Idaho. And I can't service all of that. So I was limited to receiving only about a third of, you know, by the calculation, if you need 3 million people, but my serviceable area is 2 million people, then I've lost a third of the opportunity. And that was, you know, looking historically, I'm like, oh, these other people are doing pretty well. They're hitting these types of numbers, and I'm hitting this type of number. You do the math. Oh, that is a third less than that. Oh, and the successful ones also bought up like 3 or 4 or 5 areas.
Yeah.
Know? So they have.
So that's a pretty good analysis, because Ray Kroc used to pick the locations, use a lot of analysis, and Walmart the same way, about what would work based on the density and the population.
Yeah. And I talked to some of the people inside after a while. They're like, you know what? It was a new team. There was old team and new team. And old team was the one that just sell. Let's just get as many of these out there. And they were selling technical people.
Yeah.
Because that was the owner. The owner was a technical guy. And come to find out, the new team said, yeah, we wouldn't have sold this franchise to you because we would have seen that it was a failing, you know, proposition.
Yeah.
And they, so, by the way, they, that the franchise is taking 10% off the top, right?
Yep. Yep. Which pinches things even further. So yeah, you're like going along the next 2 years were just a ride, you know, and it was, I was just trying to figure out how to do this. Now the whole time I'm still a fractional CFO. I have all these clients and not a lot of them because I can only do like 20 hours of work or something like that to be able to focus on the business for another 20 hours or 60 hours. And I'm like, you know, I actually really enjoy what I'm doing. And that entrepreneurial itch that I've always had, I'm getting scratched because I am part of the strategic team. I'm doing stuff I really enjoy. I'm working with these entrepreneurs. I'm providing lots of value to them. That stuff that is definitely within my wheelhouse. Man, and I'm just stressed all over the time with this company that I have. I don't want to do this anymore. But I felt stuck. I was married to it. But that was like a mindset. And all I had to do is change that mindset a little bit. Go, no, I don't. I don't have to do this anymore. And that was at the beginning of 2022, like right at the beginning. You know, I was trying to add, I was going off of this area of like adding more complexity to solve the problem when I realized the real answer is to take away complexity, take away this whole entire thing. I've got something now that like, and really just like the timing, what was interesting is like, you know, you look at whenever you're doing due diligence, you got to look at the P&L both on a cash basis and on an accrual basis. Because if I set it up on an accrual basis, then I had tons of revenue.
It looks great on the bottom line.
Yeah. And it's like, well, it went like this, like my actual was like this and this and this. But if I just tweaked it and showed it on a cash basis, it looked like this like perfectly fluid thing because there was this like getting payments here and here and here and here over time where the reality was not that. The reality didn't match the cash flow. The reality matched really the output, the amount of work, the demand, the sales and everything else. And so when converted to a cash basis, man, this was a valuable company. Now, you know, I bought the company for $140,000. Well, based off all these like valuations, it was now, you know, it was really seller's discretionary earnings, you know, like below what, $5 million or so. Like it's just all SDE, not like some EBITDA multiple or something like that. And so, you know, calculating all out, man, this was going to be worth $350 to $400, even like it could be argued at $500,000 if you had like a 3x multiple. And
you switched that mindset, but who's like inserting it? Like, you know, should just sell it. Where did that come in? Yeah,
that came from the one thing, the book, the one thing. You've heard
the one
of that
thing.
Book?
The yes, one yes, thing. That's Peter Thiel, is it? Yeah.
Let's see. I have to look it up. But anyway,
who is that?
Yeah, it's bugging me now. It is. But in this one thing, there's this focusing question, which is like, what's the one thing you can do? And by so doing, everything else becomes easier or unnecessary. And I read this book at the last part of
Gary Keller.
There it is. Gary Keller. Yeah. And I read this book. I'm like, what's the one thing that I could do? And I just thought about, what if I sold the company and this like, all of my like pressure and stress just was like, went away. Like, I could totally do this. And so that was the change of mind. It was like a no duh. Let's take away complexity and let's just focus on this. So I started making a deal room, you know, and putting all the information I needed into it, reached out to the business broker, got it listed.
Same guy.
I'm like, look, you already know the business.
Oh, he's like, he probably say, oh, I know it's coming back around.
Yeah. But during this whole time, I had, let's back up a little bit. COVID sucked.
Oh,
you know, in a relationship based business. There was another thing. And we couldn't, even though our industry wasn't like required to stay home or all that, all the insurance adjusters, they didn't want to talk to us. No one wanted to talk. So those lunches stopped happening. Face-to-face meetings stopped happening. Those are like old school marketing methods in this industry reign. You know?
Especially the essential services kind of,
So we couldn't do that anymore. And so, we did the best we could, and we were receiving enough jobs to be okay, but it was just the stress of like that, the hockey sticking. Well, we stopped getting jobs, and I was like, I received idle money. Like, you know, the
PPP SBA, loans,
not the PPP. We got PPP loans, and that was like, that definitely helped. But the EIDL loan is when you have to pay back. We got that. And with that, I'm like, great, I'm going to hire salespeople. We're going to fix this problem.
Just push through.
Yeah, this will allow me the funds to be able to like afford to like build this the right way and let it start working again. But it was after I did that, and after I hired, there was really like two extra hires during this time, that I had this epiphany of, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So I listed it, and then I went and talked to one of our competitors. Not competitors, sorry. I went and talked with one of our big customers that we get a lot of, like a contractor. Who is subbing out a lot of stuff for us.
Were you going for advice or to try to sell it to him? What was the intent?
Well, the intent actually was that I didn't want to do this anymore. I had these salespeople and they were doing I liked them and I wanted to give them a soft landing, but I didn't need them anymore. I just decided I don't want to push this and grow it. I want to get rid of it. So what do I need? What do I need to just sell this and have it be successful, and I'm going to get rid of everything else. So I had a particular person that I knew I needed to get rid of. And I went over to this contractor and I said, hey, there's this person here. Do you want them? And they're like, well, I'll look into it. But you know what? I got to be honest with you. We're probably going to bring in-house everything that you're doing. And it was like this blow for a moment of like, oh, no. This is like one of our biggest contractors. They give us a lot of jobs, a lot of referrals. And if they go away, like this thing is worth nothing. And I'm just going to have to sell every asset like piecemeal.
Yeah.
And
pennies.
And then the light bulb went off. Well, what are you doing to build it out? Like, how are you going to do it? He goes, I don't know. We haven't really figured it out yet. I'm like, well, why don't you just buy me? It was like, hey.
You said that right on the fly.
Oh, right there. And he was like, actually, yeah, that makes sense. So we both asked our franchises, because he was a franchise, I was a franchise. Both franchises said, no, this is like a competing thing. You can't do this, you know, in the restoration industry. And so I said, dude, this really sucks. I can't do it. He's like, yeah, man. But hey, if you want to just do an asset sale, you know, give me a call. And I thought, oh, shoot. Well, I don't want to do that. I want to see if I can get as much money out of this as I can, you know?
Yeah, there's some cash flow there. It's not pretty, but there's some cash flow.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to go find an owner-operator like me, someone who wants to buy their job and get into it like I did. But the sales kept declining, and now we're in the red.
Oh, shit.
So after those few people that I talked to, you know, you have to show them the most current financials. And it was like, hey, what's going on right now? You know, I try to make up the best story, the best spin on it. But the reality was that this isn't going to be good. And even if they want it, if they need financing for it, the SBA is going to say no.
Yeah, that's zero. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all up to like seller financing at that point. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to shut it down. And so I did. But I called this other guy back and said, all right, let's move forward with it. And was able to get asset value, like, you know, market value of all the assets. And it actually like if you're looking at it from a multiple perspective, I actually ended up getting more out of just the assets themselves than if I had some like multiple valuation at that point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So like all in all, once all assets were, you know, they bought a ton of these assets. They didn't buy the vehicles. So I sold the vehicles separately and I ended up having like $250,000 left over, you know, after that.
Yeah.
So, bought for 140, sold for 250. Now that sounds great, but don't forget the 150K that I had put into it.
And the stress and years off your life. And how much did that cost?
Oh, I know. So like, you know, you throw up a little bit in your mouth. And now it's been, that was in 2022 that I sold it, summer of 2022. When I shut the doors, sold it all out. I had now an empty building that I needed to lease, that I needed to sublease because they took everything over to their location. And, you know, but this was in 2022, everybody was looking for warehouse space. So I got into it at 45 cents a foot and the going rate at the time was 95 cents a foot. So my landlord, who is who's backed by a REIT, was more than happy just to take it from me, you know, and renegotiate the lease. And they got someone in within 3 months and I was completely out.
Wow. Yeah.
And man, that feeling of just being out was like, I remember just standing in this empty warehouse and just having this sense of when it was all over.
Yeah.
You know? And then I just doubled down on what I enjoyed already, which was the CFO stuff.
So was there any craziness to do it again?
Oh, absolutely not. I have had that scratch itched, itch scratched with like a steel wool, and I don't want to ever go back to it.
Just say no.
Yeah. So now, you know, and now, but I still am an entrepreneur. I do my own thing. I do it with my clients as well as I'm building my book of business. And I enjoy that. I have a lot of fun with it. And
that's fractional CFO work, right?
Uh huh.
So exactly. Tell me exactly what when somebody comes in and goes, "Hey, I need a fractional CFO." What is that? What do you do there?
It just means, you know, the term CFO is like a really diluted title that means so many things to different people.
Yeah.
So, and it can really mean anything. It just means the financial leader for your company.
Yeah.
Someone who can tell you not only, you know, I do more than just accounting. My background is in accounting, but accounting is not finance. So I take accounting, I set it up right, and then we look at the finance, which is reporting, forecasting, modeling, capital structure, debt raising, equity, helping through. So at my stage as a fractional, mostly I'm jumping in companies that are somewhere between 5 and 50 million. This is the point where they're like, doesn't make sense for them to hire a $300,000 CFO. Let's get that same kind of knowledge and skill, but on a fractional basis. So, you know, maybe $40,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year or something, you know, depending on how much time is required. And that's what I do. So, I really enjoy it. So, you know, you have a handful of clients at any given time.
What about this acquisition experience made you smarter about your current fractional CFO?
It had so much to do with it because now I come in, I feel like a lot of advisories just are, you know, lip service. They tell you stuff because they read it in a book.
It's like a policy once in Washington, right? They've never been to the country. They've done anything like they're writing this policy. And like just once, I'd have somebody that was in the country for a while understand what's going on.
Oh yeah, so I can talk to these founders, and I can say, guys, I know you're not sleeping well right now because of this problem.
Empathy.
Here's three solutions, and I'll tell you, it's gonna be okay. I'm seeing it 100 times now. We're going to be okay. And let's just do these things. And I'll go get some capital. And you guys, we have to make some OPEX changes. It's going to be kind of painful. But, you know, just laying out the groundwork and the path forward from the perspective of someone who's really been in their shoes before, super valuable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what do they say about boating? You know, anybody can you know, navigate a boat in calm weathers, but get that experience in rough seas, completely different.
Absolutely. So, you know, I like to say it was a merit badge that I now have. I don't ever want to do it again. Would I do it again if I had the opportunity? You know, no. But I needed it. That was the only way that I was going to really understand
what I really enjoyed. Do you think that's why you did it? To say, hey, man, I need to baptism by fire here. Yeah. I need some, yeah.
I think I'm a risk taker and had, you know, and I just kept talking. It was like this insatiable appetite to do my own thing, so much so that everybody who is like, all the naysayers around me are like, whatever, man, you just have to go do it. And I did it. And it was like, yeah, I was burned, but I wasn't burned too bad. You know, what I got out of it was, you know, I was able to get out of it with my own resources and it was fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't how I wanted it to be, but it wasn't bad.
You know, I don't know how much you've read about Warren Buffett, but, you know, Berkshire Hathaway was a textile company and that died on him. That stopped making money because they outsourced his textiles. So that, and he kept the name, I think, as a reminder. So like, don't buy these last cigarette puff kind of companies. Like, was there anything in there going, okay, if the company was, you know, 10 years, 50% margins, really profitable, would you still say no? I mean, everything checked the box. Would you still say no?
If I went back, well, the thing is, there was a lot of boxes that I didn't know existed that needed to be checked.
Yeah.
And now that's the big thing that I gained from this. The financials and all of that, that's only a portion of this. And honestly, it's not the most important thing because all we know about a forecast is that it's wrong.
Yeah.
And so, but what are those lead indicators, you know, that are really going to change things? And how do you go and measure those things? That's what's really important.
Yeah. Like, you know, how many turns does a business do? Well, if it only turns twice a year, you're going to be, you need a big line of credit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. God, Duke, this is a great story. I really appreciate you being on the show.
No, absolutely. It's fun to tell it now. It, you know, I couldn't talk about it for maybe a year or so. But thanks for being my therapist for a moment.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much, John.
Okay, I'm stopping and give it a few seconds.